Welcome into the Just Above Average podcast. My name is Dominic. I am your host. In today's episode, we'll be talking about two major topics. The first being why 2020 is not like 2016 in the presidential election. And the second topic in the world of sports, we will be going over the first week of NFL games and a few fantasy players out there. We're going to look at some fantasy waiver wire pickups you might be interested in. So let's jump right in to the first topic, being why 2020 is not 2016 in terms of the presidential election. And this kind of follows up on the last episode where we were talking about where the race sits right now between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. The biggest reason I see that I missed last time on the last podcast, that 2020 is different than 2016, and that is the lack of a third-party candidate. Since the 1960s, there have been around five presidential elections where a third-party candidate or third-party candidates, plural, have taken a substantial portion of the vote and or have played a spoiler to one of the two major party candidates. In 2016, we saw that with Jill Stein of the Green Party, Gary Johnson of the Libertarian Party, Evan McMullen to some extent, who ran as an independent, and of course a plethora of write-in votes. So let's look to the past a little bit as we talk about third-party candidates. Since 1960s, course, in the 60s, you had George Wallace, who took quite a few votes away from Lyndon Johnson. But you have to go to 1980, where John P. Anderson took 6.6% of the vote. That didn't really matter a whole heck of a lot because Ronald Reagan won in a rout over Jimmy Carter. That was the Reagan Revolution year. In both 1992 and 96, we had Ross Perot. In 92, he took 19% of the vote. And in 96, he took 8.5. Some George H.W. Bush alumni like to say that he was the one who took their votes, but social science, political scientists, people who study elections, over time, they've gotten the data in, and the results of those votes, or the people who claimed those votes, we're pretty much 50-50 split between Bill Clinton, the eventual winner of 92 and then later 96, and H.W. Bush in the 1992 election. So that is one of the great myths in American politics that doesn't quite play out. In 2000, there was Ralph Nader under the Green Party banner. He took around 3% of the vote. That isn't a huge deal, except for the state of Florida. We all know 2000, the Florida result, of course, still to this day, questioned by many. Al Gore pulled ahead early in the night, only for networks to call and later recall their calls before George W. Bush eventually took the state of Florida, going all the way to the Supreme Court. And here we are today. George W. Bush being a two-term president, all maybe perhaps due to one Ralph Nader. But to a lesser extent, there's always going to be some level of the losing candidate claiming third-party candidates stole their vote. We saw in 2012, third-party and write-in candidates made up less than 1.5% of the vote. So it's not always a key factor in the presidential race, but I am going to lay out a few numbers here that leads me to believe that the 2016 election, I think it's kind of scary how few percentage points in so many states can make such a huge difference. But let's go to the 2016 election stats. So roughly 130 million Americans voted for one of the two major party candidates, that being Hillary Clinton and or Donald Trump. 66 million, roughly a little under, for Hillary Clinton, and about 63 million for now the incumbent president, Donald J. Trump. In 2016, nationwide, there were over 7.5 million third-party and write-in votes. Gary Johnson got 3.25% of the vote. Jill Stein got around 1%. And in certain states, especially like Utah, Evan McMullen took a considerable portion of the vote as well. So that's at least 4.25% just between those three, not including the write-ins and the other smaller third-party candidates, that may have seen their votes go somewhere else to one of the major party candidates that could have totally swung the election. Just a reminder of how close some of these states were. The state of Wisconsin, which is kind of now the perennial swing state, as it were. Roughly 3 million people voted in the 2016 election in Wisconsin. The margin, winning margin for Donald Trump, was 23,000 votes. That's what separated him and Hillary Clinton in the state. Third-party candidates made over 150,000 votes in Wisconsin. So with such a small margin, this time around, 2020, there's not the third-party candidates, A, getting the press, and B, really putting on much of a campaign. Last time around, Gary Johnson, Jill Stein, both got a lot of airtime, press time. This time around, sometimes they're not even filing for ballots in certain states. Let's go to Minnesota, a state that Donald Trump has been investing in media, playing commercials, things like that. That's one of the states that Hillary Clinton held by a 45,000 vote margin. It's part of that blue wall, the fabled blue wall that helped Democratic candidates win. That 45,000 vote margin, there were over 200,000 third-party voters in 2016. Pennsylvania, same story, 44,000 vote margin, 250,000 third-party votes. So kind of in that upper Midwest area, and it's all across the country, but especially those upper Midwest states that we know are going to be tight this time around, or kind of where the election hinges. Those 30 third-party votes, if they go to one of the two major party candidates this time around, those will matter. Like, if it's super close, let's look at the Nebraska 2nd Congressional District, where Nebraska awards each of their electoral votes individually by congressional district. And Nebraska 2 is the Omaha district, kind of the one that Democrats can win. The rest of the state's kind of unwinnable for them. But in Nebraska 2, 2016, 6,000 vote margin, over 25,000 third-party votes. If, say, half of those go to a single candidate, just playing hypotheticals here, that might be the difference between, say, a 269-269 tie in the Electoral College for one candidate, or perhaps a 270-268 closest election in history result. This time around, I don't see either side playing up the third-party angle. I think it's going to be huge, hugely different, that is, because this time around, no Gary Johnson, no Jill Stein. We're just looking at red and blue, Donald Trump, Joe Biden, that's it. And no, Kanye West will not make a difference. Let's jump into an ad break here before we get back to week one NFL and fantasy football in the second segment here on the Just Above Average podcast. Welcome back to the Just Above Average podcast. I am Dominic, your host. Let's jump right into week one of the NFL. We saw some upsets, some injuries, some surprising performances, and a little bit of everything in between. So let's get to the first game of the week, my Kansas City Chiefs, who hosted the Houston Texans on Thursday night. Let's see. Old Clyde the Glide Edwards-Helaire. Welcome to the scene. The Chiefs kind of dominated this one without any trouble. There were a few injuries here and there. Deshaun Watson just got his mega extension. 34-20 was the final score, but everybody could see it wasn't really that close the entire time. Not too much to say about this one. The Chiefs just keep rolling. Now they have a running game. They are good. As for Houston, if Bill O'Brien's idea was to spread the ball around more rather than rely on D-Hop so much, I could see how that could work, but it's not going to work the way it did this time when Deshaun Watson was kind of running for his life. Let's get to the Sunday games. Seahawks crushed the Falcons. Russell Wilson's still good. Who knew? One fantasy sleeper for you here in the Atlanta Falcons, B1 Russell Gage. While the Falcons lost Austin Hooper at tight end, they did bring in Hayden Hurst, but he didn't see that many targets, which kind of opened up a window for a third receiver behind Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley for the Falcons, and that B1 Russell Gage. If he's still available in your fantasy league and it's past waiver wire, go pick him up for free, add him up. That is a good sleeper pick for you, especially in PPR leagues. You got over 110 yards receiving. Definitely a breakout star there. The Bills beat the Jets. Adam Gase is a terrible head coach from all I can see. McDermott is a good coach for the Bills. Josh Allen needs to work on his fumbles. And Le'Veon Bell today went on to the IR, so 400-year-old wizard Frank Gore will be the starting running back for the Jets moving forward. Mitchell Trubisky is fourth quarter Mitch, apparently. His Bears made a 21-point fourth quarter comeback in their 27-23 victory over the Lions. Adrian Peterson all day did look pretty good in a Lions uniform. Broke off a couple big runs. No fourth quarter points for the Lions, though. I think that was kind of their downfall after they had a 23-6 lead heading into the fourth quarter. Packers whooped up on the Vikings in a game that saw 77 points. Aaron Rodgers is out with a vengeance, and I don't think LaFleur saw that coming, but who knows? U.S. Bank Stadium, beautiful there in Minnesota. Kirk Cousins scored 24 points in the fourth quarter, but that thing was already over by then. So Dalvin Cook just got an extension. He's rolling along. Devontae Adams is Aaron Rodgers' blankie. So if he ever gets an injury this season, the Packers are going to struggle. He threw to him for 14 of his 32 completions. And that's almost half. So that's something to watch there. If a team has a lockdown corner, they double Devontae Adams. Who is that next receiver up for the Packers, if anybody? The Patriots beat the Dolphins 21-11 in Foxborough. Cam Newton looking pretty darn good running those quarterback powers. Could be a fantasy sleeper for you if you were worried like I was about the shoulder not holding up. Yeah, we'll see. Do still have some questions about the passing game there for the Patriots. Sony Michel, who was hurt, looked pretty good. Damian Harris is on the IR. Expect him to come back in week 4, kind of share some of that load in the backfield for the Patriots. The Washington football team. What a name. But old Riverboat Ron, apparently doing something right down there in Washington, D.C., as he has Chase Young and that defensive front all over Carson Wentz and the Eagles. They score 20 second half points to the Eagles 0 in a 27-17 victory. And I mean, Carson Wentz got beat up. Of course, he didn't have Alshon Jeffrey. Miles Sanders was out. But still, This ain't your last year's Washington football team. They look pretty darn good. Chase Young, future superstar. Guaranteed. Dwayne Haskins, I wasn't a believer before this year, but didn't look terrible. But, of course, the theme of the day, Washington football team, 8 sacks. Absolute beatdown of Carson Wentz and the Eagles. In a game that was much closer than I was thinking, but I am thankful for because I have Josh Jacobs on most of my fantasy teams, the Raiders of now Las Vegas beat the Panthers 34-30. Jacobs, 3 TDs and 93 yards. Really helped me stay close in a couple leagues, even though I didn't win. But yeah, Teddy Bridgewater, first game out for the Panthers, looked pretty good. CMC doing his thing. Let's see what old John Gruden can do, because Matt Rhule and the Panthers didn't roll over. I was kind of expecting this to be a Raiders come out, were pretty good moment, but the Panthers determined to make it close, and they did. 34-30 Raiders. The Jaguars are not tanking, or Phillip Rivers is just washed up. One of the two. Gardner Minshew, near perfect, like 19 of 20 passing the football. Pretty dang good. Phil Rivers, a couple big interceptions, or at least one big one in a big spot. Marlon Mack, torn ACL, which leads me to my breakout rookie. My guy, watched him at the University of Wisconsin when I was in grad school for a couple years, Jonathan Taylor. 2-time Doak Award winner in college. That goes to the best running back in the collegiate level. The dude is a stud. Does struggle with holding onto the football sometimes, so watch for those fumbles. But he's got that 4.3 speed. He's built. He's fast. He's quick. He can tote the ball. I think the Colts are in good shape. But the Jags, surprise win there, 27-20 down in Jacksonville. Ravens smoked the Browns. Not much to say about it. Lamar Jackson looking pretty good as a passer. I did not believe in him. Still question it, but hey, can't argue with the results of a 38-6 beatdown. The Browns better get better in a hurry. They have all the talent in the world, but if they don't have a coach and some momentum, could go downhill in a hurry. Chargers beat the Bengals after Joe Burrow leads the Bengals down the field for a chance at a game-tying field goal. Randy Bullock misses the field goal. Not a whole lot of offense in this one, but Joe Burrow leading the Bengals in a new direction. I do believe Joe Burrow will be pretty solid. Chargers are hurt without Derwin James, but they still have a really, really good defense. I am curious to see how they handle that secondary, but yep, we'll see. How long does Tyrod Taylor last at quarterback? Do we see any Justin Herbert this year as the other rookie quarterback? Who knows? Will Tua start with the Dolphins before him? Maybe. Who knows? But yeah, Chargers beat the Bengals.
I don't have schedule information.
Sorry for that. The Bucks. First time Tom Brady and Gronk are in uniform, get beat by the Saints. Old TB12 with his quarterback sneak for the first touchdown of the day, but they did not lead after that. Drew Brees still has it. The Saints are still good. The Bucks are still working on that cohesiveness. Not quite together yet. Leonard Fournette signs. Didn't play too many snaps, but Ronald Jones looks pretty good. Rojo, too. Pretty good. Sleeper. Another sleeper here in the fantasy world. Scotty Miller. Today, Chris Godwin goes into concussion protocol. Just reported symptoms today. This is Wednesday, September 16th. But Scotty Miller. I joke. But yeah, he is that short, shifty, fast white guy receiver that Brady has loved his entire career. He is the Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola, Wes Welker, whatever you want to call him, the short white guy, wide receiver, usually in the slot. This is Brady's next one. Scotty Miller, Scott Miller. Pick him up. Fantasy leagues. Going to have a lot of points. Moving on to the Cardinals and the 49ers in a pretty surprising game here, especially considering the Niners defense being so stout. But D-Hop had himself a game. First game in a Cardinals uniform. 14 catches, 151 yards. Kyler Murray learned how to slide pretty well, but not surprising considering he was a first-round baseball pick. But the first overall pick of last year, he led the Cardinals pretty well. 24-20 was the final score there. A surprising result was Rams beating the Cowboys at home in the new SoFi Stadium. Malcolm Brown, fantasy sleeper, led the way for the Rams, who are still paying like Brandon Cooks and Todd Gurley to not be on their team. Paid Jalen Ramsey a huge extension. He did play possibly the greatest actor in the world on the kind of final possession offensive pass interference with Michael Gallup that we've seen, but that's probably why he's paid so much money, because the dude can act. He can flop like an NBA superstar. Zeke is Zeke. Gallup, CD looks pretty good. Problem for the Cowboys. Blake Jarwin, torn ACL. Do the Cowboys look for another tight end in a trade? Do they bring up one of the backups? Jason Witten's old and on the Raiders now, so can't bring him back. But let's see what the old Cowboys do before next week, because they are 0-1 under Mike McCarthy. And then that was it for the Sunday slot. Monday, we had a doubleheader Monday night. It was the Pittsburgh Steelers bottling up Saquon Barkley in a 26-16 victory. Big Ben's elbow looks just fine. If you have Juju Smith-Schuster, look for him to have a bounce back year, because Big Ben is his man. He likes to throw to him, and they look pretty good. James Conner, ankle injury announced today. Not sure how that's going to affect him. Benny Snell looked pretty good. In the meantime, not too much to say. The Steelers defense, if defenses / special teams are in your league, go ahead and pick those Steelers defense up, because they are loaded. We've got Minka Fitzpatrick, who they traded a first-round pick for last year from the Dolphins, still has a couple years left on his rookie contract. There is one of the Watt bros on the defensive line, and he can rush the passer just like old JJ. Derek Watt, also on the team as a fullback now. But Steelers, Big Ben, leading the way. Daniel Jones looked pretty good, though. Media's kind of been in and out on old Danny Dimes, but found Darius Slayton a few times. Golden Tate was out with injury, but Darius Slayton looks like he might have slid in there to be one of his new favorite targets. And the final game of the weekend, Titans, despite Gostkowski missing four kicks, three field goals, and an extra point, take a 16-14 victory over Drew Lock and the Broncos. Something to mention, though, Cortland Sutton was out for the game, has a sprained AC joint in his shoulder. Doesn't look to affect him long-term, but was out for the game on Monday night. Both teams kind of struggled to move the ball. Titans made a goal line stop at the one with four downs earlier in the second or third quarter. I can't remember which. Gostkowski missing kicks everywhere. Time management there at the end for Vic Fangio was an issue, but I could see where he was going. If the Broncos get two plays, 17 seconds, you can get three plays if you make a quick pass, quick run, get down. I understand they just took too much time on the first play when they could have made some quick throws, get in a field goal range, and see if McManus can crush a ball, take a win. But not too mad about it. That was week one in the NFL. fantasy football fans. Hopefully your teams are doing well. And if not, look at that waiver wire. Provided you some sleeper picks here this week. Russell Gage, Malcolm Brown, Scotty Miller. Three big ones. Go and pick them up. That's it for this episode of the Just Above Average podcast with your host, Dominic. We'll hope you tune in next time where we will be mixing the world of sports and politics, talking a little bit about protests and the effect it has on our country. We'll talk to you next time after the end of this episode, the Just Above Average podcast. Adios.